Craig, this brings back memories of excitement. And I don't know if is nerves ever part of it as a scout and a GM on draft day?
It never was for me. I think it's the culmination of your season's work. And, you know, you are excited about the opportunity to add players. There's certainly, you know, a certain amount of suspense about, you know, where you're picking and, you know, where you're targeting players. But I've never felt any angst with it or in any fear or anything. It was just, I always felt confident going into the draft that we had done our work and let's get at it.
So let's get at it tonight. It was interesting. Somebody asked me, now this is a fan who obviously doesn't watch the games, but saying, hey, I look at the stats and Lafreniere and Jonathan Drouin look similar players to me. And I politely was like, don't just look at stats page. You know, yes, I get they were both CHL players of the year. They both had 100 points, you know, in their draft year. And then Jonathan Drouin, of course, went directly to the NHL where Lafreniere, because he's a late birthday, got to play another year in junior and scored another 100 points. But I don't see many similarities between the two, do you?
No, I mean, they were very talented. I mean, Jonathan was a very talented junior player. And let's keep this in mind. He was the CHL player the year after he was drafted. He did go back to junior. And, you know, so, you know, Alexis Lafreniere joins, you know, rarefied air. Him and Sidney Crosby are the only two-time winners of the CHL Player of the Year award. And you know what? Jonathan Drouin had fantastic skill. He still has fantastic skill. He still has fantastic abilities in the game. The problem with Jonathan Drouin is he wants to play the game in his mind on his terms. And that's what's led to the frustration of teams with him. That's what's led to him not being a good enough player. And you know what that is? That's maturity. And maybe he'll never get it. But I don't see that in Lafreniere in any way, shape, or form. And it's just another cautionary tale about just looking at stats and using it as weighting it improperly in your assessment of players.
Yeah, you're right. No, he did go back, but he actually won it in his draft year, and then Anthony Mantha won it in 14, the year that Drouin went back. Now, Craig, one of the biggest conversation pieces of this draft is the goaltender Askarov. Right, no goalie has gone in the top 10 since Carey Price in 2005, and I don't think Montreal is regretting that pick whatsoever. What do you make of the approach for Askarov? I look at some teams, and there's a lot of teams that could use him prior to the Oilers at 14. I don't see him falling that far, but hey, I guess there's always been surprises. What do you make of teams' approach to goaltending?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded question. I mean, we might have to have a six-part series on this on the radio, and we don't have time for that, so I'll be real quick. There's two things that drive me batty when it comes to commentary from GMs. Oh, you can't take a goaltender that high. Oh, boy, it takes a lot of courage to draft a goaltender that high. Oh, I don't know if I want to do that. Really? Like, you're assessing players, and you're going to just bail on a goaltender? And the other thing is when they tell me how hard it is to make trades. Oh, really? Okay, I'll find somebody that can make trades then if you can. Two things that drive me batty. I'm going to take you back in time, Jason. You remember the 2012 draft?
I do.
8 defensemen were drafted in the first 10 picks.
Yep.
The 19th pick in that draft was Andrei Vasilevskiy. There is no player in that draft, in that entire draft, the 18 players picked ahead of him and every player picked after him, that has been better than Andrei Vasilevskiy, that has had a greater impact not only on his team but on the league than Andrei Vasilevskiy. So we hear a lot of things too. Oh, best player available. Guess who the best player available was at 1? It was Andrei Vasilevskiy. Guess who the best player available was at 2 if you didn't take him at 1? Andrei Vasilevskiy. So now teams are going to go down and say, oh, it doesn't matter. We're not going to take a goaltender. The best player in that draft. The best. Not one of the best. The best. And there's nobody close. Nobody. So again, keep going down the same path. Oh, it takes a lot of courage to draft a goaltender. Oh, I'm not so sure I want to draft a goaltender there. Okay, good. That's how you miss on great players.
Now, I don't remember. Was Vasilevskiy rated, you know, that high? Did a lot
yeah,
of guys
he was,
have
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. Okay. Oh, absolutely was. And keep in mind, that's Yakupov, Ryan Murray, Galchenyuk, Griffin Reinhart, Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Matt Dumba, Derek Pouliot, Jacob Trouba, Slater Cuckoo, Philip Forsberg, Michael Grigorenko.
Yeah, like even Tampa Bay.
There's nobody close to Vasilevskiy.
Yeah,
Tommy
Tampa
Wilson and Tuukka Rantanen have won Stanley Cups. They've contributed to their teams. Morgan Riley's a good defenseman. Jacob Trouba's a good defenseman. Hampus, none of them, Jason, are in the class of Andre Vasilevskiy. None of them.
No, it's fair. Even Tampa
Bay.
Take
the goaltending argument and best player available and discard it.
No, because Tampa Bay had the 10th pick, and they took Slater Kukko and then took Vasilevskiy. So even Tampa didn't, while they hit right with Vasilevskiy, they didn't take him at 10. And now, you can say many years later that you did that knowing he'd drop, but I don't know if we ever fully know if a guy will drop. So when you look at Askarov and teams right now, do you you have Askarov 7th on your list. So,
six,
you look at him.
At 6. He finished 6th.
Oh, did he finish 6? Okay, so he's 6 now on your list. And it's funny because I was looking at, now Ottawa has 2 picks, 3 and 5. They don't really have a young goaltender in the system. And I look at some teams where you say, okay, like Anaheim, I know they got John Gibson, but, he's getting a little bit older. Buffalo doesn't have a young goalie who I think's, a real top-notch prospect. Carolina, Edmonton, obviously there's a few other teams. How would your mindset be on Wayne? Okay, well, I've got this goalie who's 2 years older that we like, and we think we really like him. Would that maybe make a team potentially bypass him?
Yeah, and I think that's legitimate. I mean, I will say this about Buffalo. They have Uukko Pekka Luukkonen, who I think is a really good goaltender. I really do. He was the best goaltender of the World Junior Tournament in Vancouver when Finland won the gold medal. He was a large part of that. So I would say they have a really good young goaltender. So, you factor it in because you have to factor it in, Jason, because there's only so many spots for a goaltender to play and to develop under. So, when you're factoring in like that, but you cannot factor in the argument, oh, geez, you're not sure, or goaltenders haven't turned out, or, oh, boy, as a general manager, I'm not so sure that that's a move I want to make. Just get good players. I was asked yesterday about the Detroit Red Wings, what they could use. I said everything. They could use a number one goaltender, a number one defenseman, a number one center, and number one wingers. So if Steve Yzerman stood up tonight and said, I'm taking Askarov at 4, I wouldn't bat an eyelash because they need a number one goaltender. So if they believe that he's the guy, take him. If you want a number one defenseman and you take one, that's the guy you believe. But Detroit needs something of everything. But the fact of the matter is I'm talking more about the critical analysis, the assessment that goes into with goaltending. And I don't buy it. I'm not buying it.
Craig Button joins us from TSN. Craig, do you believe teams are adequately prepared to scout goaltenders properly? Because I believe it's totally different. When we look at skaters and puck movement, all that stuff, goaltending is a completely different position. Do you feel most teams have adequate? Because I've talked to some scouts and they're like, dude, I fill in a scouting report for a goaltender, but it's like, I admittedly say I'm not great at it, right? So, and then it comes down to, oh, good legs, whatever the hell that means. So is that something that's lacking in teams, is having good goalie scouts?
Jason, I think it's a fair question, and I think that like anything else, you're looking at a more of a technical position, and understanding what players have that you can develop, and I really define it between developmental weaknesses and inherent weaknesses. So I think when you're scouting, I think it's really important to understand, what are the attributes a goaltender has that can be developed, and what are the attributes that a goaltender has that may not be developed. But, you're watching goaltenders, and one of the things, you can learn about goaltenders. Why can't you learn about goaltenders? In my years, I worked with Tim Bernhardt, who I learned as much about goaltending as I did from anybody else. I worked with Ricky St. Croix. I worked with David Pryor. And they really impressed upon me, here's what you look for. I'll never have the feel of what it is to be a goaltender. Timmy and David Pryor and Rick St. Croix, they have that. I don't. But I can tell you what, I'm really confident in assessing goaltenders. Does that mean there's not people better than me? No. But why can't people go and learn? Why do they sit here and throw their hands up? Because what I will tell you is this, Jason, guess what? You're going to make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. And you're not making mistakes on players you don't believe in. But when you start off with a scouting process that starts to say, I really don't know about goaltenders, well, then don't send me a report. And maybe we don't think you can scout defensemen or left wingers or centers either. You learn. And that would be a red flag for me if a scout says that to me. Go learn about goaltending.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, I'm looking at your final list. And, you know, in your top 10 picks, pretty much the same that you had back in March. Then there's a few little subtle changes. You know, I think you flipped Drysdale and Cole Perfetti 4 and 5. And then you switched, you had Sanderson and Zari jumping 11 and 12 back and forth. But Seth Jarvis.
Oh, no, I always had Sanderson. I jumped Jarvis up and I moved that score off to 6 ahead of Quinn.
Yeah. You have. The one you sent me, you have Seth Jarvis was the one who jumped up 10 spots for you from 23 to 13. But he also back in January, if I'm reading it correctly, was 46th, right? And Jake Sanderson. Now, January is, you know, early on, and you've done this for many years. When you see a player like that who's continually jumping up your rankings throughout the year, what allows a guy to jump up like 10-plus spots?
Well, scouting is not static. It never is.
Yes.
It never is, Jason. And so you have to be evaluating all the time. You have to be evaluating over time. And you have to be evaluating with respect to what you're continuously seeing. So if the draft was in June, I would have gone to the World Junior camp. I would have been watching early parts of the season to see where players are progressing, because you can't just rely on what you saw and what you assessed up to a point in time. You continue to take that. Now, I can tell you this with Seth. You know, that's the beauty of scouting, is that you can, in January, you can sit down and you can learn, you can listen, you can watch. I simply put, I did not give him enough credit for his abilities. And I'll say that back in January. And then I had the opportunity after March to go back and watch full games and assess more things where maybe I said, and not just him, other players, where I felt really confident now on October 1st saying, he's going up because he belongs to be up. And I'll be straightforward with you. I'm not sure I have him high enough. I'm still doubting myself.
Yeah, I'm high on him a lot, man. I really like him. I just like his competitiveness, and his fire and skill is one thing, but the competitiveness is a hard thing to get in guys. I do want to ask you, it is rare to see, you know, two young guys. Now, they both happen to be, you know, technically late birthdays in Jack Quinn and Marco Rossi. They're both September birthdays of 2001, both on the same junior team with the Ottawa 67s. Now, I didn't watch any Ottawa games this year. Craig, I'm going to be straight up. Did Rossi and Quinn play together often, a lot? And does playing with one another when you're that elite, is it a challenge that maybe, you know, both of them look better? Because I'm a firm believer, skill needs skill, and you can look better when you play with more skilled guys. But, you know, is there any concern at all to two guys who played a lot together? You know, could that inflate both or either of their value?
That's a good question. To answer your first question, though, they played on the power play together. They did not play regularly together at even strength. They were on separate lines. But, okay, so now we're going to talk about, well, isn't the NHL got lots of skill in it?
Yeah.
So if you show you can play with skill at junior hockey, why wouldn't that be something that's significant for translating to the NHL? Like, if you show you can play with a real gifted center, in the case of Quinn with Marco Rossi, like, why wouldn't you think he's going to be able to play with good centers in the National Hockey League? Because the things that translate, getting open at the right time, being able to take advantage of good playmakers. Same with the centerman, Rossi. You know, if you're a playmaking center, you've got to get the puck to the goal scorers and into the right spots where players can take advantage of it. Well, if you can do it at junior, I suggest it translates. It's a significant step forward in translating that to the NHL. And the other thing I'll say to you, how many guys scored 52 goals in the CHL this year?
One?
Not very many. But now I hear, well, you know what? He's a late birthday. He scored 52 goals. Okay, well, good. Like, tell me who else you want ahead of him. I don't evaluate on birth certificates. I evaluate on on-ice attributes, on-ice skills, and look at what they can do in a game and how they can take advantage of their skill set. And then I try to project that in terms of how it translates to the NHL. I never go, He was born on September 19th. I wonder if that is a factor for him scoring 50. You know what you need to score 52 goals in junior hockey? Good hands and a good release. That's what you need.
Craig, I want to get your thoughts. Of course, the trade happened about a half an hour ago, but the Montreal Canadiens deal Max Domi to the Max Domi and a third round pick for Josh Anderson. Anderson obviously maybe a big skilled winger coming off an injury plagued season, and Domi's a guy who just didn't fit in there. I really like this trade for Columbus. What do you think?
Yeah, I really like it for Columbus too. Now, here's what I'll say about Mark Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens. I think Mark has been surgical with respect to, looking at his team and going, this is what we need. He went and got the backup goaltender. He went and got Joel Edmondson. Now he goes and gets Josh Anderson. Obviously, he would have to be satisfied on the medical report with respect to Josh. But, I think that that's a nice fit for the Montreal Canadiens. They add some more size in their forward group. And I think Mark has done a terrific job. There's no way they make this trade unless they're satisfied with Josh Anderson's medical report and that they can sign him longer term. And Max Domi, he became a luxury. And I don't say that as a knock against Max, but he's a centerman. And you can put him on the wing. I don't think that's the best place for him. Now he gets a chance to be a second-line center in Columbus. And I think that works for Columbus really well. I mean, and now you move forward, right? And they get a third round pick from Montreal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They needed more skill. They needed more scoring there. But I don't see this as a clear cut. Oh boy, what a great advantage for the Columbus Blue Jackets. To me, this is how trades get made.
Yep. Yeah, you look at skill. Hey, if Domi, there was something there that they didn't feel he was a fit. Are you at all concerned, Craig Button joins us, that Montreal now you got, two pretty young top six centers for next season? And maybe because I've seen what happens when you have all youth and it's not a great fit because Edmonton's done it for years and it hasn't led to success. What do you make of starting the season with Suzuki and Kotkaniemi as your 1 and 2 centers?
Well, I'm not so sure Kotkaniemi's the number two. You're dismissing Philip Deneau. Because Philip Deneau is a really good two-way centerman. Now, here's what I'll say. All those years you watch in Edmonton, they never had a Carey Price or a Shea Weber. Oh, they had Jeff Petrie, but they traded him. They never had a Ben Sherratt. They never had a Brendan Gallagher or those guys. It was always young guys all by themselves. So it's completely different. There will be no problem in Montreal with Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, and Philip Deneau up the middle of the ice. And they showed that in the playoffs against the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers. Because I'll tell you what, when I was watching down the stretch of the regular season after the pause, I really liked Philadelphia. And then when I saw them play against Montreal, so I'm not worried about Montreal.
Okay, that's Craig Button from TSN. Craig, quickly going back to the draft, and I'm not surprised by it, just because when you look at the defense available after Jamie Drysdale, I think it goes all the way down. You have, I think it's William Wallander's your next highest rated D, and then there's Poirier and Gouley and Schneider, but none of them are in the, around the 14 range. Part of drafting is when we look at this draft 5-6 years down the road is certain guys, they might all be equal players, but the opportunity you get, because whichever wingers, and let's say it's a winger that the Oilers take or a skilled forward, whoever it is, let's say it's Jarvis or Holloway, or maybe it's Holtz LaPerrière, we'll just use them, I don't care who it is. You come to Edmonton in the next few years, you get to play with McDavid or Draisaitl, where if you go to Carolina, no offense to their centers, it's not the same. Like, that's something that I think when we evaluate later on, don't we not have to look at what situation a player gets drafted to, because that can really change your opportunity and your NHL career path on who you get drafted to?
There's no question about it, Jason. And the other thing you have to evaluate is, are teams patient with development? Are they forcing players into a lineup before they're ready to take advantage of those significant skills? Like if you're going to come and play in Edmonton, you got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Well, guess what? You're going to have to take advantage of the opportunities they're going to present to you. But if you're not ready and you're not developed, you're not going to be able to take advantage of it. Oh, yeah, there's a great example of that. Jesse Puljujarvi. And now, so you have to evaluate both sides of it. The, you know, what a team had in place, but I think most importantly, was the player ready to take advantage? Because you've heard me say this before. I tell young players, you better get yourself ready to contribute at the NHL level. Because if you're not ready to contribute, the league will chew you up and spit you out like nothing.
100%. Craig, do you see, for fun, any player getting dealt today? Like, Max Domi's already been traded. Is there another player you think's an obvious guy that's going to get dealt this week?
I'll be straightforward with you, Jason. I leave that to the insiders. If anybody wants to know about players that could potentially be traded, I would suggest you follow Bob McKenzie, Darren Drager, Pierre LeBrun, and Frank Saravalli, because I don't get involved in that. And I mean, the same names you hear are the same names I hear.
Yeah. No, I wasn't saying a rumor. More so if you think a guy just like Max Domi, we kind of thought was going to get traded just based on everything. If, like, Jesse Puljujärvi, I don't see getting traded by any stretch. But I'll ask it this way then. Is there a free agent?
I see somebody in Tampa Bay getting traded.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, Tyler Johnson. Is there a free agent that you think is a good fit for a team? Like a Tyson Berry? Is there a team that needs him? Or is there a Taylor Hall where you say, man, if I'm the agent and I'm the team, I think that's a good fit?
Yeah, I think there's, I'd have to go through all the different teams. I think fit is always important, but, you know, Henrik Lundqvist. I think Henrik Lundqvist, you know, talk about him going to the Washington Capitals, ideal. You got Ilya Samsonov, who's going to be a star. Young goaltender, you got Henrik there. I think if Vancouver was not going to re-sign Jacob Markstrom, I'd be all over Henrik Lundqvist there to play with Demko for the same reason. So I think there's lots of opportunities for different players to end up in certain spots. But, I mean, it's too numerous, and, you know, I think that that's always the key evaluation. But, you know, we'll see as time goes on here. But I'm expecting movement here in the draft. I'm expecting players to move because, you know, in a draft year where there's certainty, you know, there could be significant movement.
Craig, always great to talk to you. It'll be busy. We'll be watching the draft. We'll be covering it live here on TSN 1260. So enjoy it. Hopefully you're correct and there's a lot of action.
Well, yeah, that's what I think. But maybe there will only be one like last year when Arizona moved from 14 to 11.
No. I'm with you, man. I like the trades. Let's see a few wheels and deals. Thanks, Craig, as always.
You're welcome.